From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
So it is the last day of the year. It's our last show of the year. This is our 10-year anniversary year, and it's the last show. Not of our anniversary, because the anniversary actually ends in July, but it's been a great year. I've had a ton of fun. Today we will be looking back on the year. My teammate Scott had the idea of picking his favorite shows of the year and running small clips. So this will be a kind of a unique show. But before we get into that, I just want to say, man, I am grateful for the things in my life that make me happy each day. And like, and today, you know, it's like the last, just wrapped up my last CrossFit over here at Anywhere Fit. I did my last yoga this morning at Eastwind Yoga. And then I'm going to do my last workout of the day at InstaFit here in a few minutes. But in between, we're recording this little segment. But I am grateful for those things. And it'll be the last workout of the year. After that, I'm going to go over to Placer Gun Club and shoot my gun a few times. And hopefully that'll be the last time I shoot my gun this year. And then tonight we have a little party that my daughter's throwing out at Haneyville for New Year's Eve. And luckily I don't have to drive too far to get home. It's about 300 or 400 yards. So looking forward to wrapping up the year with a cold beverage with my family and some friends. You know, I am grateful for my family. Today is the 42nd anniversary of my first date with my wife. So we've been going out. Somebody asked me a couple days ago, so what's the best New Year's party you've ever been to? And I was like, well, my wife and I went up to Tahoe with this small group about 42 years ago on New Year's Eve, and one thing led to another, and the party's been going on for 42 years. So I would have to say that is number one. I'm also grateful for my family, the rest of my family, my kids, who helped me with the growth factory. They helped me with my real estate stuff. My son Marcus, who runs Allegiant Vets, our nonprofit that's focused on helping military veterans. And then their kids, my grandkids. That's what keeps me sane. And of course, I'm very thankful for my business partners, my internal team, Scott, Rick, Ali, Tim, Olga. There's a handful of them here at Haney Biz and at the Growth Factory. I appreciate you very, very much. And all our business partners, our investors. We've got like 100 limited partners. And of course, all the backyard community that makes it all possible. And so what went well this year? This is kind of an interesting thing. We were talking about this a couple days ago, and what were the highlights of the year? Like, if you could like list the top highlights of the year, well, Scott, my man, he listed out what he thought were the top highlights, and I have to admit those are pretty good. So before we get into the show, I'm going to list the top highlights of this last year. And number one at the top of his list is we threw the best damn party Sacramento has ever seen. It was at Haneyville. It was the Best of the Backyard Awards. There were around 300 people in my backyard. We celebrated what's happening with the Backyard Advantage and all the people that are a part of that, the leaders of Sacramento, our investors, a number of our startups that are building great companies here in Sacramento. We were all there talking about the great things that we had done and really about how great we're going to be. And it's all around this culture of love. So it is coming together, and we celebrated in September to really show a little appreciation to one another. And again, this is the 10th anniversary of the Mark Haney Show. So we're building our audience. Our YouTube subscribers are up. Our Instagram followers are up. So we're at all-time highs in all these. So we're really happy with Scott's got some stats here. 268,000 views on YouTube so far. 132,000 views on YouTube for 2025 alone. So things are really, LinkedIn is 191,000 impressions for the year. So a lot of big things. We got awarded The George Washington Honor Medal for founding forward organization Haney Biz did, and my family. We were awarded the Servant Leaders Award by the John Adams Academy Foundation, recognized by the Business Journal as Innovator of the Year for the SAC Innovation Awards. And then we were also recognized by SAC Business Journal in the list of Power 100. So while I was recognized for a lot of these things, I give all the credit to my team, my family, the people that have helped me sometimes as the face of this thing that we've got cooking around here, this big experiment. I get recognized a little bit more, but really it's the people that are alongside me helping build this dream. So and really to the people that are listening to this show, our audience here is this is where we started, right? We started this whole thing with one podcast where Riah Faber came on the show, and I was really nervous, and one thing led to another, and I started having more and more shows, and that really led to the launch of the Growth Factory and all the other great things that we do around here, the Backyard Advantage. So really just a ton of gratitude as I look back at another great year. And so as I mentioned at the beginning, today's show is going to be a little bit different. Is we're going to list, I don't know how many shows Scott went through, but he picked some of his favorite shows. And so we're going to show clips of those shows. So let me start by our first show that we're going to show here is really, this is a compilation of shows. And the first one was Sanjay Varshney. This one happened in January of last year. And so there was a lot of talk about the economy. He's an economist, and he's going to be coming back on the show in the next month or so. But let's listen to his clip as he talks about the economy last January. And a lot of his predictions have turned out to be right. So I hope you enjoy Sanjay. Yes, it's the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we are doing that by building the Backyard Advantage, which really is an attempt to build the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it's all based around this culture of love, helping one another, showing love to your fellow Sacramentan. And ultimately, if we all work together, my theory is that could be an advantage. It's starting to work through the Growth Factory and some of the other things that we're doing. And today on the show, I am joined by who I think is probably recognized as the economist for the Sacramento region. Obviously, he knows the economy globally, but he also has a focus on Sacramento. His name is Sanjay Varshney. He is the founder and principal of Goldenstone Wealth Management. So I want to ask you about a couple of recent things, very recent things, and how, you know, if you put on your crystal ball, you know, get out a crystal ball, how these changes might affect the economy. You brought up the election, but I'm gonna start with technology. Okay. How do you envision technology affecting the economy, because it's going to affect our workforce and so on? So the rate of change in technology is accelerating like crazy. That's where I invest, and for the most part, with the Growth Factory. And I have to imagine that that's going to increase productivity dramatically. It's already doing it for my portfolio's customers are seeing all kinds of gains in productivity, but I'm just seeing it from sort of my lens, and then to look at the larger view, I'd like to turn to you to get your sense.
You named it. Productivity gains have been the most critical part of the equation in the last 1 year. So while a lot of people are fearful that the rapid advancements in technology are going to be very disruptive to the labor markets, especially the companies that are not able to absorb the higher costs that might come along with artificial intelligence, at least the investment portion of it. But I think there's good news on the horizon. Because productivity has gone up really high, for the longest time, productivity gains were actually static, or they were even declining at one point in time. Right now, we have seen an increase. And that's great news, because when we are more productive as a society, as a labor market, we can basically overcome some of the other challenges better. So even if there's a disruption in the short term in the labor market because of technology, and again, go back to the 1990s when the World Wide Web was commercialized in 1995, for example, right? And the internet came in. And a lot of people were very fearful that, oh my God, we're going to all lose jobs, you know, and these jobs will never come back. The good news was that as we made advances and people became more productive, people found better and higher uses for their own labor. So the labor market was able to evolve too. And we were able to advance as a society and do great things that we could not have done otherwise.
I love that optimism because you've seen it with every major change, every cycle, whether it be the Industrial Revolution or the internet, like you're talking about this whole digital thing. It's made everybody more productive. And what I'm seeing is that artificial intelligence is going to be as big as any of those or bigger.
Absolutely. And the same thing goes for inflation. So even if I see 4% inflation, but I see 2% increase in productivity, I'm saying that's not a bad place to be because we are actually getting better as a society with our pockets, you know, and with our overall, you know, net worth in the United States. So these are all positive trends. There's a lot of fear right now with artificial intelligence, for example, what that might do in the short run or the long run. But I think we have to stay optimistic here. I'm very eager to see exactly what changes come in the next 2-3 years and how we do business.
My sense is that we're going to find ways to provide containment for the potential downfalls of artificial intelligence. And ultimately, we will get our arms around that. That's what we've done in every other situation in America where we've had inventions and we figured out a way to get our arms around it, like invention of a car. Yeah. It's scary. Everybody's going to get killed. Yeah. Well, you know, we've got our arms around it at some level. So just what we do. Okay. The next show that we're going to do is Liz Conley. She was one of the co-founders of Trifecta Nutrition, and she begins to, as she begins to launch her new business, we decided to talk about that on the show, but we also talk about, I guess, leadership and having people that want to help us, how we help develop them and having us have empathy for what they want to build in their lives. And as we show that empathy and we tie back to what they care about, it really helps us build a team. So stick around and listen to Liz Conley. Joining me on the show today is Liz Conley. She's been on the show before. She's one of the founders of Trifecta Nutrition, but she's got something new that we're going to talk about. So anybody out there who has grown a company to hundreds of employees knows that you start off with, you know, in this case, you and your brother.
Yep.
And, you know, then it's like, oh, we better hire our first manager because we now have a few employees. And then you're hiring managers of managers and then directors, people who are building business units, and like there's so much opportunity in companies that are scaling like that if the employees can see that opportunity and know what to do to get it. So I just wanted to set that up because I think that's so important. And that and for a company that if you don't have that, you're not, it's going to be really tough to grow.
100%. And I honestly attribute a lot of our success at Trifecta to how much our team grew with us. And Greg and I had to grow a ton too. Like who I was 10 years ago when I started the company, that's a person I don't even know today, which is cool. And you know, I built growth plans for myself too. You know, you gotta take it where you can. And so yeah, we ended up, I just built so many of these and wasn't able to find something out in the market that really like solved that problem for me. So I was pulling together like Audible and Udemy and books and whatever I could, giving people mentors, trying to figure out how can I up-level them and help them drive not only more value in the role to my benefit as a business owner, but also, you know, helping them get where they want to go and follow their dreams. You know, maybe that's in their role or maybe it's totally different. I don't know if you're familiar with the Dream Manager.
Patrick Lencioni.
I'm not sure who it's by, but
yeah, I've read that book. I was going to ask you that as you were setting this up. I'm like, all I could think about was the Dream Manager.
Yes, it was. I mean, I read that maybe 5 years ago.
Huge. And I read it like when I was growing my companies, I think we had about 100 employees, and I came across this book, and I'm like, yes.
Exactly.
And I became the dream manager for our company.
Okay, so you're very familiar. So, so that concept I wanted to bring to Trifecta, and so that's, I spent a lot of time figuring out, like, okay, what motivates you? How, what are you excited about? How do you want your life to go, literally? And then marrying that with how can we bring more value to the business? Because that's obviously very important. You can't do anything without also having that component. So with the new company, that's really the whole premise behind it, is building these kind of growth plans. And I've found over the years that most of my team didn't learn by reading books like me. They didn't love that.
They're not like the brainiac type.
Yeah. I give them a stack of books and they didn't often read them, unfortunately. So I had to think of other ways to really get to that, learning. And so, like I mentioned, Udemy, Audible, mm-hmm. more auditory is typically what I found to work the best. And visual, like YouTube, even like I'll send somebody a YouTube video. Hey, watch this 10-minute video. It's exactly what you need to learn for this skill. That type of thing. So the whole new business, Katsu, is all video based. Because okay. I really want to like hit home for people that way. I actually dabbled in thinking about writing a book in between Trifecta mm-hmm. and starting Katsu. But I just thought I would really be able to hit more people and help more if it was more visual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Our next show is with my yoga instructor, the owner of East Wind Yoga, Andrea Spacek. She's going to share some of her perspective, which is... it's not just health and fitness. It's really a perspective on how to be happy in your life. Oh, the other owner of East Wind is also on the show, Heather Harmon, too. And she, I don't know if Scott picked out the clip where she got a little bit crude, but did you, Scott?
Yep.
He picked out that one. Okay, so there might be an F word coming up here. So close your ears if you don't want to hear an F bomb by Heather Harmon. Some of my favorite people in the house tonight. I have Andrea Spacek and Heather Harmon. They are the newer owners of East Wind Yoga, a place that I go almost every day, pretty much every day. And so I see Heather occasionally as a student, and I see Andrea a lot as my mentor, I suppose, my silent mentor. You're an official mentor of mine, but I listen to all the words of wisdom associated with like mind, body, spirit, working up a good sweat. Talk about life balance, because I think when we start a new business or something like that, something where you tackle something big, your life can get out of balance in those kind of situations. And maybe it's good that you get out of balance, because that's how winning is hard, especially when you're starting things. But how do you, Andrea, you have a couple little kids. How do you keep it all balanced? You know, working mom with entrepreneurial job.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound easy.
So I had a kind of a double whammy where I was going through a divorce at the same time that I took ownership of the studio mm. with Heather. So, it was a lot. Last year was very challenging. So much growth, so many things for the first time, learning how to live on my own and have the kids. I 50-50, but on my own was a lot. And I did many times get out of balance necessarily. I kind of accepted I was going to be for a short period mm-hmm. of time. And you can do anything for a short period of time if you know it's going to end, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just been a recalibration continually. But one thing I did for myself in the beginning is I said, I'm going to take one day a week as a self-care day, one day. And I would go to the hot springs, or I would go get a massage, or I would do something that was just really for me to decompress. And I found that worked really well. And then I let it slide and I got away from it. And just recently I brought that back. And so finding strategies to... also consolidate, I'm going to respond to all of these emails on Thursday versus mm-hmm. right now. I was always like a now person. And so I'm a recovering now person. I'm not fully there yet, but that immediately you're having to respond to everything that's coming at you, it just doesn't work anymore for everything that's coming at me.
Yeah.
So
how, okay, so Heather, how's your life balance? And maybe just some advice for entrepreneurs, since you've walked in those shoes. You're in this case, you're more of an investor, is what I can tell. But so I assume how's your life balance? And then any advice? How's your life balance currently? And then any advice to entrepreneurs for discovering life balance or finding a way to get there?
Yeah, I have an unpublished TED Talk called Balance. I don't believe in balance. I think that if we're really going at life, we can't control all the variables all the time, and they're always coming. And so if we get into this rhythm of I've got balance, it's like we're just always a hairpin away from being pulled down. So the way I operate in life is I've got all these things I've got to do. I have a million tabs open, and I'm really present with the tab I have open. I'm really, really present. I prioritize ruthlessly. So I have to think about, is this a P0? Is this the thing that has to be done right now? Or is this something that can wait? And I think about time allocation. And like, depending on how fast my life is moving, I'm calibrating time to the seconds or the minutes or the days. You know, it's like sometimes life is just so accelerated that I have to think about what every single second, like how many seconds can I give that thing? And in what order of operations? As soon as I surrender that need for balance, I'm liberated. I am at peace because I'm in full acceptance of the chaos my life is in, right?
And that's sounds like my daughter.
So important. I have to live in that space. Yeah, I know some people need the illusion of balance. I think it's an illusion. I don't think we ever have balance. I think we're always in this constant state of flux, making trade-offs. We have to make trade-offs all the time. And if we don't do that from a place of surrender, from a place of acceptance, then we're constantly in inner conflict and trying to like make things add up, do the accounting in such a way where there's, you know, the P&L adds up. Like, it's just not going to. It's not going to. There's never enough minutes in the day, at least in my life, to accomplish all the things that I wish I got done in the day. So I have to accept that this is how I'm calibrating. This is how I'm prioritizing. These are the things I got done. Forgive myself for the things I didn't get done. Reassign. And I live in that space at peace. I didn't always live there. When I tried to achieve balance, it was just this constant state of disappointment in myself. Like, I was not getting there. So, I mean, that is my advice to entrepreneurs, is embrace the lack of balance and be willing to surrender to that space.
Okay, the next one I think you're going to like. We did Rob Archie. He owns a bunch of restaurants. So we're really profiling his journey into success, from athletics to building this really cool chain of restaurants right here in Sacramento. So I think you're going to really love hearing Rob Archie as he shares a little bit about his story. Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are in a different location than normal. Super excited today. Rob Archie, he's the founder he's the CEO of Urban Roots Hospitality Group, and we're sipping some of his beer. And cheers, Rob. This is really cheers, good stuff. Rob not only makes beer, but he owns a bunch of restaurants, and we're now in his speakeasy. And I walked out for a second. I could barely find my way back in, but excited to be here with you, Rob, and look forward to profiling your story. We love sharing the stories of winning and people here locally that have had a lot of success. And it can be really inspirational. Occasionally it's educational, so maybe today I'll have some of that, but I expect to be inspired, because it seems like what you're doing is fun. And so it motivates me to be in a speakeasy, which is kind of like a secret bar. We're sipping some of your private reserve. And I'm fired up to have you on the show. Thanks for inviting me out. We have this motto, put your money where your town is. And I can see you reinvesting into your home, your town here. This is your people, and you're reinvesting the success right here instead of opening up in New York or Vegas or you're opening up in the Sacramento airport instead of maybe somewhere else. Right. So you're building from like the inside out.
It just dawned on me. So remember I'll tell you about those $372 days?
Yeah.
So I used to walk home, and I'd be walking home, and you couldn't think past the next week, because your business is day to day. It's touch and go, right? Mm-hmm. And so I used to just think, I said, man, all I want to do is have a memory that if I'm sitting around in a rocking chair and I'm bullshitting with my grandkids or with my friends or whoever, I could tell them I used to do this and it's a fun story.
That's kind of like, you know, your worst case scenario.
Bro, I got a good story over a good bottle of whiskey or something. You know what I'm saying?
It's the story got pretty dang good. Your story is going to be a really good story nowadays.
It's like, you know, we ain't keeping none of this shit. It's all, you know, you pass it on or whatever. But it's like, at the end of the day, you just got this story. So I said, you know, let's keep it rolling.
Super fired up because you were coming up on our 10-year anniversary of the show. And so we interview people that have had a lot of success, and occasionally it's people that are more in the startup phase and maybe even a medium-sized company. And so today on the show, I've got Chris Ewing, and he was on the show the first year we started the show. So it had been year one. So this is almost like a good anniversary show, if you will. And he was a guy that had already had some success in building out Sherry's Berries and this incredible food business, taking it national, global. I can't remember, but I know it got big under your leadership. And then I think the last time I talked to you, you were also doing One Ink, and you know, you're just sharing with me that story, and it's blowing me away. You're no longer is somebody who's maybe at the beginning stages of entrepreneurship. You weren't even then. You had already had a lot of success at that stage, but now, wow, One Ink. You told me that it just sold for like $2 billion.
Yeah, we just did a transaction in first quarter of last year, and it was around $2 billion. So I did Sherry's Berries, and I started a behavioral marketing company and then sold it. And then I started two insurance entities and then an insurance company and sold them. So One Ink was an outgrowth of that, and all of those assets got sold in 2010, 11, and 12. So One Ink was a standalone company on its own, really in 2011. And so we had not sold a dollar outside. So it really started in 2011. And so day one, you know, we're like, well, we no longer have any revenue. We got to go raise money. And it was pretty wild because we saw the opportunity. The hardest part as an entrepreneur is you see what is just absolutely the easiest opportunity in the history of the world, right? And you're like, all we got to do is this, and it's just going to happen. It'll be great. But convincing other people to understand that vision and believe in your ability to execute is a lot harder. And so it was kind of funny because, you know, I'd raised a bunch of money before, but you just never know whether you're going to get investors or not. So I went down to meet with our lawyer. And now this is pretty surreal. And this is when I knew we were on the right track. Went down to meet with our lawyer in Palo Alto and said, hey, we need to raise money. Do you know any, you know, here's our business plan. Let's get going. And at the end of the meeting, he goes, how much money do you guys need? And I was like, well, we need X. And he goes, okay, well, here's 500,000 to get going. And which is very unheard of, right? It's very hard to raise money like that. And so the fact that he believed in us and, you know, we're in the right space.
Our next one is Monique Brown, who really is one of the architects of the Backyard Advantage. And she is now a leader over at Aggie Square and, you know, carrying through the Backyard Advantage messaging and I guess culture of love in downtown Sacramento and really throughout UC Davis. So stick around and hear my a few short clips with Monique Brown, one of the founders of The Growth Factory. Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are in a remote location. So if you're watching it on YouTube, you can tell. In fact, I would suggest that you watch this one on YouTube because we are at Aggie Square, Connect Labs specifically within Aggie Square, and it is an incredible facility. It's an incredible building, and I'm going to describe it in a second and get some help from Monique Brown, who is running this facility. Monique is the co-founder of The Growth Factory. You've probably heard her on the show a few other times, and she's been working alongside me for the last several years trying to help entrepreneurs, not only with The Growth Factory, but with Haney Biz and all our angel investing and all the different events that we have done over the years. Monique is that person that really gives
a lot more than she takes to the entrepreneurial community. And so I am proud to have her on the show with me today. The backyard advantage and the love isn't just a fuzzy feeling. It's a verb. So how do you get those conversations going? And that's where we got the question, what are you working on and how can I help? Because a lot of times either we're shy or we forget to ask that type of question, but yet deep down we all want to help each other, yeah. But we never get to that conversation. Yeah. So many other times we're talking about might be small talk, or I'm bragging about what I'm doing, or you're bragging about what you're doing, or what somebody else is doing. It's like, well, wait a minute, what can we do together?
Yeah. So I think that is the only thing. And I would just say that, you know, the same as always, right? Like, how can we continue to leverage the assets that we have to support each other's mission, work, the companies that we're working to serve and stuff like that. And so this is no different. And I think that when new things happen, it can be exciting. I think it can also be kind of scary for, you know, people who are working in the ecosystem, you know, and Wexford is really, really intentional when they build in communities. They're like, we are not replacing, we are, you know, amplifying, we are expanding, we are inviting.
Okay, here is one that I did with Lucas Mahares. And this guy is, he is an up-and-coming leader in Sacramento. He is a wealth manager, but he's got a perspective on like how to win. And that's really important, I think, for all of us to be thinking about, especially as we go into the start of the new year, is we need to be putting ourselves in the right mindset to come out with a W this year. And as I talked about, I like to work out. So there's this fitness component of winning that I think is really healthy for all of us. But really, it all begins with our mindset. So stick around and listen to Lucas. We like to share the stories of winning. Sometimes that includes some struggle, but often it includes a big dream and the steps along the way to achieve those dreams. And today, I'm really lucky to have Lucas Mijares. He is the co-founder and CEO of Zion Capital. And he's a young guy who has done really, really well in many aspects of his life. And so I want to dive deeper into, like, how do you design such a great life? And then we could talk about the different areas of our lives. I believe that we, the most successful people, need to learn how to compete and that it's okay to compete. I learned, and my kids learned a lot of that on the athletics field. That's where I learned a lot of mine too. And I know you an athlete.
Yeah.
And so what's your game face look like? What does it look like when it's game on? Because most of the time you're being a nice guy, which is still, you're trying hard, but there's a trying hard and making sure that everybody gets what they want in life and so on. But there, when it's you competing, what does that look like?
Okay, so there's two different versions. There's the me competing and I'm me versus me by myself. Like whether that be an ultra marathon, you know, Spartan race type atmosphere, or like I recently did a High Rocks race. Mm-hmm. That is different because there's no team atmosphere. When there's no team atmosphere, I can kind of just, I can go hard and just be my, and I can really, I'm pretty hard on myself in a sense of, I'll know if I'm half, you know, wetting it. Like if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it right. And I go extremely 100, like I'm 100%, 100 mile per hour kind of guy. On a team or when I coach a team, I'm intense, but I need to know how the team's doing. So I'm a combination of, I'm a big strategist, but I'm also a rah-rah guy. And we're only as good as our weakest player in anything. And so I will very much be a leader and driver, but I'm also going to be the one to go in the back and run with the slowest person to pick them up and keep them motivated and keep them in the fight. Because if they drop off, we all of a sudden got weaker. Right. You said, I see all these signs around here, and hopefully I'm not butchering it, but like no one built something good by themselves. Mm-hmm. What's the right way
Nobody
to say
Nobody builds a truly great company alone.
That's the one.
Yeah. We call them Markisms. I make up a lot of my own little mantras.
I love it. It's amen, man. It's true, right? They say if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go somewhere far, go together.
And one of my favorite people on the planet is our next clip. Taro Arai, he is one of the founders of Makuni's, who recently had some great, exciting news, but that company has done really, really well. And Taro, he is just, he's just one of those people that makes you, I guess, appreciate humanity. So as he shares his wisdom, please listen closely, because everything that he says makes you sort of reflect on yourself and probably makes you want to be a better person. And today on the show, we have somebody who I've respected for a long time. In fact, this is, we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of our show, and Taro Arai was one of the first episodes we shot in year one, and such a wonderful human being. And I have the chance now to bring him back 10 years later. A lot has changed, but maybe as we set this up, I want to set this up by recognizing that if you like me, you will love Taro, right? So we have a lot in common. He was born in Japan. I was born in Japan. You delivered the Sacramento Union, right?
Sacramento B.
Oh, Sacramento B. Oh, I was the Union. Okay. You went to Oakmont High yes. School in Roseville, as I did.
Wow.
You do yoga. I do yoga. You're a Kings fan.
Oh, yeah.
And you're a grandfather now.
Yes.
So a lot in common, but you're a much nicer person than I am. And you're going to find out if you've never heard, you probably know who Makuni's is, right? The restaurant Makuni, they're all over the place. We're going to find out about his business, but you're going to learn through this episode what a really genuine business owner sounds like. Feels like, if you're watching on YouTube, what he looks like. So I hope you check into YouTube, because Taro always will wow you with you know, what he's wearing, the way he presents himself. So welcome to the show, Taro.
Thank you so much.
I
can't believe
honored.
It's been 10 years.
It has been 10 years. Wow. I am honored that you are here.
Okay, our mission statement is to be the most loving and loved company in the world. So we don't have to make best sushi or, you know, looking nice. It's all about loving them, and we want to be loved by you guys too.
Yeah.
So that's my dream, and that's our goal. And we have a core values too, but everything kind of related to loving others and love by you guys.
Interesting. Well, I mean, when did you come up with the mission statement? When did that begin?
So going through the hardest time. I say, you know, what's the most important things for life and for business? And it's all about love. Mm-hmm. That's what we decided.
So basic.
Yeah, basic. Yeah, people forget. If you have love, everything will be okay.
Even
you know?
In business, you're supposed to love each other?
Yes, we do.
I know, that's amazing. That's amazing. I'm inspired by that as well. And at the beginning of the show, I talked a little bit about this backyard advantage, this culture of love. So I believe in that too, yet somebody might smirk that hasn't been exposed to it, but why do they love Makuni so much? Because of the love they feel. And they don't even know that it's love, maybe. They just know they like it, and they know it makes them happy. So it's working, obviously.
But again, I have to show it with my actions, right? I took my boys' trip. I was telling them what to do, how to Kaizen yourself. And then I asked them, how can I be a better father? I should get a suggestion, right? Wow. They kept writing.
I got writer's cramp, Dad.
I don't need a book. Can you tell me, let's say, 1 inch? And my younger son said, why don't you follow your own advice? I said, whoa, that's what, like what? Well, you told me not to text and drive. I see you doing. I said, well, because I'm special. No, I realized I shouldn't be just talking and telling them what to do. I should show with my action. So since then, I have a new goal every year. I have something to quit every year, make sure I'm not addicted to anything. For example, like I asked my wife too, how can I be a better human? Oh, she started writing and writing. We can always improve. So I told her, can I start with one? She said, yeah, you love sharing. I said, love sharing. Why don't you think before you speak? I said, like what? There's T-H-I-N-K. T, is it true? H, is it helpful? I, is it inspiring? And it's a hard one for me. Is it necessary? K, is it kind? And I still say it. So whole year, I have to think before I speak. I wasn't becoming a mute because everything I said wasn't really necessary, right?
Okay, and this next clip is one of our fun shows that we did this year. Ali McCanny and Rick Spencer, my co-founders in the Growth Factory and Growth Factory Ventures. We talk about all the economy here in Sacramento. We talk about venture investing. We talk about building startups and a lot of perspective on what's going on with technology and how that's really shaping not only the way that we invest, but the way that we're going to live our lives. And I am with some emerging thought leaders in the world of venture capital and artificial intelligence and technology and how it's shaping and reshaping, the conversation today. So today should be a little bit educational. We've got Ali McCanny, one of the owners of the Growth Factory, our new partner that we have brought on. And then we have Rick Spencer. He is one of the co-founders of the Growth Factory, and he runs Growth Factory Ventures, our venture fund. So welcome to the show, guys. This is our third show together.
Third.
You guys are getting recognized. Now, when we do a show and we talk about, I'm talking a little bit about the economy and how I believe AI and technology is going to drive a lot of productivity and hopefully solve a lot of the economic woes that we have as a nation, the big concerns on everybody's, everybody's plate around debt and deficits and so on. But I think that AI is a huge part of the answer. But you guys have been talking specifically about AI and about venture. I'm just wondering, like, sort of what feedback you're getting about the people that have seen your thoughts.
The excitement is definitely there, right? And excitement around all AI is there. And in venture specifically, people are seeing that, where is the future going, right? Like, venture is, such a historic kind of industry. I think even I tell people that carried interest came from the whaling industry, right? So we're using principles from, multiple hundreds of years ago.
Yeah,
right?
I think Christopher Columbus was a part of a venture capital deal where he came over and discovered what he thought was America.
Yeah,
and he thought was something else.
And we've talked about this before, like, as much as venture invests into AI and innovation, it hasn't really innovated itself as an industry. And so not only does it need to, to keep pace with all the opportunities AI is creating, it really needs to be, in our opinion, reinvented, right? Like, the future of venture can be built. And, we, just like when we launched Growth Factory, many people said, why Sacramento? Why you? And, we had the confidence that, one, there was enough great founders here, that we've been operators and we understand how to build businesses, and that we could build this amazing community, right? And so we proved a lot of people wrong. And now I think it's the next step, which is, why not us? Why not now? And is this, like our new logo is like, is this a window of opportunity that we need to not only step into, but accelerate? And really the most, I think, validating thing is when we're having these conversations, people have tested something or the other, right, with AI, or they've seen a demo. And so it's not a new conversation, but when we structure it in this format of the Venture OS, and not just say, hey, we're building this one tool or we're building this one, data component, right? But we're actually thinking about the life cycle of venture, and not just what most people think about is pre-investment, but 80% of the opportunity post-investment. And that validation is really, energizing us, I would say, to say, okay, we're on the right track because these people want this. They're asking, how can I help? They're offering, investments. And so that's really giving us the motivation. But I'll let Ali talk a little bit more because he's actually thinking deeply about this, with our technology partners about what to build.
Yeah, I mean, to Rick's point, it's really humbling and exciting sitting in these conversations and sharing what are we doing when it comes to fundamentally thinking about the operational structure of the future of venture, what we call Venture OS, mm-hmm. right? So that part is really exciting, but it's just the beginning of what the future going to look like, right? In my opinion, there's a lot of experiments that are happening that are tool-based. Even our partners that we talk to, they're doing certain things, but they're just input and outputs. There is not a kind of a bigger picture orchestration of what do we think the future of venture investment going to look like. And then beyond that, once you invest, how are you going to support the portfolio companies? And how are you going to make sure that they're supported in their future rounds of fundraising? So it's this bigger picture that we're thinking about how the future of our industry should shape, and how should we think about AI as an enabler, not just an input and output tool. So it's really exciting. Our partners are, you know, Rick mentioned it. I love when we shared the core principles of VentureOS and how this stuff will come together. The first reaction is, how can I get it? Like,
yeah.
Where can I start?
Right. Yeah. You're using that is more than a tool. That's your business model.
Yeah, exactly. So
I want to borrow your business.
and we're just trying to be smart, right? I think the key here is the future of startups that we're going to invest in is AI native. They're AI first. So if they are building with AI as their enabler, what is our enabler? How are we thinking about venture and what's going to be the enabler for us to be part of the next 100 years mm-hmm. of venture versus what we learned from the traditional way of us going about running the business of venture firm?
Okay, and here's one with Derek Chase. As I may have mentioned this, but we've sold a couple of companies at the Growth Factory this year. One of them was Derek Chase's company, OnSite. They're like a robot company that monitors solar farms. We sold another one as well, which really brings our returns in really solid for paying out dividends to our investors for this year. We're in the top 5th percentile in some aspects of how we rank is a venture fund, and Derek is a big piece of that. But so on this show, we talked to Derek, who has had multiple exits, and we get a little bit of his perspective because he's just one of those guys that he's super understated and humble, but highly successful, and so proud to have Derek share his wisdom on our show this year. And today, I think you're going to hear what I will call the greatest story ever told about the backyard. We're going to share the story of Derek Chase. He has built another great solar company. He is joining me. It's OnSite Technology. We'll talk about what's happening with OnSite. You recently had a transaction in your company, and it was really the first, you know, the Growth Factory started making investments a little over 3 years ago, 3 to 4 years ago, and you are our first liquidity event where we've actually been able to get money, you know, profits from the sale of your company. You sold your company, and we were able to redistribute it back to our shareholders, and it was a really good feeling for a young venture capital firm to begin to show actual success. A lot of our companies have gone up in value, but to actually start getting money back and be able to, you know, distribute that back to our shareholders is it feels good. So thank you for that. A little bit about the company, though. So a little bit more, excuse me. So the robots, they are out at these solar farms that are typically in more remote locations. So they're actually replacing workers that had to drive out to a remote location potentially and inspect. Now there is real-time activity happening and information sharing that the robots are doing that is really saving companies that are managing solar farms. It's really saving them on manpower. Is that sort of the main premise, or is there more?
Yeah, manpower, but also like so, you know, some of these sites, they literally have 1 million solar panels. If you have 1 million solar panels, it's 2 million connectors. That's 4 million pieces of hardware. There's just like so much at that scale to even inspect and keep track of. And the system's supposed to last 20 years. And it lives outside, and the solar plants are built in the harshest environments because that's where the cheapest land is. So you know, if you build a really big solar site, you may not know there's a systemic issue or a quality defect on the product. If you never go out there and take a look around, you get into year five, you have to redo everything. It's millions of dollars. And so the robot's really the only way to do the most comprehensive analysis of your whole site, right? So you think, you know, your car, sure, whatever, you're going to go check the oil. But there's a lot of things that could go wrong with the car. And every now and then you got to do that like 500 point check or whatever, right? That's what we do. We do that you know, 500 point check on acres and acres of solar. And then because it's done by the robot, it can just like take unlimited pictures. It can download them all and GPS tags them. Like, we've also streamlined all of the data collection and presentation of that data, because you can automate, like with your phone, the GPS isn't that accurate, doesn't have that much storage, the pictures aren't that high quality. There's like a lot of issues, like the imagery is not consistent. It's not all from the same phones if you send 10 different guys out there. So there's all this inconsistency of data collection. We make the data like really consistent so it could digest it all. We can apply AI to it, computer vision. And we have another product, the Alcam, which is an outdoor smoke and fire detector, which I'm super proud of that, because when you're in a startup, everybody's like focus on your core product the whole time. Your board will tell you that. Every business consultant in the world will tell you that. And while we were going along, we launched an entirely new hardware product with startup investors. And I think they just kind of bit their lips while we did it. But it turned out to be a huge success and it totally worked. We have patents on it. We have the first like outdoor smoke detector for solar sites. And honestly, that 1-2 punch is what got us a lot more interest than if we were just, you know, one trick pony.
That's This next one is Luke Wood. He is the president of Sac State University, and he is giving us a little bit of perspective on how to build a university in this day and age. Today's show is going to be more on the unique side. I'm really excited about today. We're going to be talking to Dr. Luke Wood. He is the president of California State University, Sacramento. And not only are they doing very innovative things over at Sac State, but this guy is changing. He's only been there 2 years, but he's changing the way I think people are viewing Sac State. And I was recently pulled up a Business Journal article, and one of the things it said on the cover of the Business Journal was that you are growing the value of a degree at Sac State. So I'm glad to hear that. Welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here, and thank you for the invitation.
So you mentioned that in some institutions, people are questioning, in some parts of society, I should say, people are questioning the value of a degree today with the way society is changing. How do you measure that? Obviously, there's outcomes, but is there a way to put a dollar figure on that? Because people are getting in debt a lot of times when they go to college, and I'm sort of wondering what makes it worth it besides, I mean, there's no, you can't put a value on confidence and the feeling of achievement. Of course, those are enormous for happiness and satisfaction, but in terms of like paying for itself, how do you think that through?
Well, you know, how I think it through, and actually there's been some great work done on this by the College Futures Foundation. They actually have a report called The Golden Door, where they analyze the return on investment. What are median earnings 3 years after graduation? What are median earnings 5 years after graduation? How long does it make for a student to make more than they paid for their degree? And fortunately, Sacramento State, we've been recognized as one of the top in the entire state. And because we're the top entire state, because California is oftentimes very cheap, much less expensive in comparison to other places, that makes us one of the top in the nation. So you can come to Sacramento State and enroll, tuition fees, you know, 10 grand. You look at most other institutions, you're paying $37,000 to $55,000 a year. So we're less expensive. We have education that's more relevant. It's more hands-on. We're in the one and only public university in the state capital of the fourth largest economy in the world. And what we're doing today is we're acting like it.
Yeah. Our next show that we're going to profile is Jordan Darling. And he originally built Freeform, which sold to a company that ultimately went public, a company that I angel invested into. But now he's building a new company, just this really cool startup that is actually replacing plywood in starting off in the marine industry, but it will ultimately be for housing and in other areas as well. So Jordan, who's just brilliant, will share a few thoughts about winning in entrepreneurship. And so we have a man in here today by the name of Jordan Darling. And in some ways, he's a blast from the past, even though he's a young guy. What are you, like 32, 33 years old
33.
Now? 33 years old, young guy. A lot of success in entrepreneurship. I want to do a little bit of reminiscing, but maybe I'll kind of set up the show today. We'll do a little reminiscing about him building really successful companies here in our region, and now what he's building, of course. So we're going to talk a little bit about the business that he is building. But I also want to do a little bit of talk about entrepreneurship in general, because you're somebody, I think, that understands the power of entrepreneurship. At 33, I want to talk about the impact it's made on your life and maybe what you've seen with other people as well. And I think really get people thinking about why entrepreneurship is so important. So let's talk about entrepreneurship then, generally speaking. You called it a sickness. Okay, so walk me through how you developed that, and what is that sickness? Besides creating wealth and, you know, things like that, what are the other sort of symptoms of that condition?
Yeah, the symptoms is not being able to kind of kick it like a cold.
Okay.
So for me, I think I've had it for probably since I was in high school. It was kind of my first rendition of a business. It was a car detailing operation I did out of my parents' house, which grew into, you know, a group bringing me in along with another kid and, you know, running their cleaning, and then that kind of scaled to getting a real job being a professional car detailer. So I started that when I was at a young age in high school. And then I kind of tried to say, okay, yeah, car detailing is something I'm good at. You know, I knew how to run a buffer, knew how to do, you know, a clay bar, knew how to wet sand, get scratches out, do all that crazy stuff. But this isn't really a passion. So then I tried to, okay, how can I do something that I'm more passionate about, that I love doing, that also makes money? So that's when I got into, I loved watercraft. So I would buy and sell with my dad old jet skis, stand-up jet skis, and I would, mm-hmm. you know, fix them up, give them a paint job, put new engines in them, and then sell them for more money. So that kind of, I was able to, in essence, pay for what I liked doing, which was ride jet skis. So I would buy and sell and flip them and continue to be able to fund my lifestyle as a high schooler, which was buying Jeeps and trucks and dirt bikes and whatever else. So that kind of started it. And then that business, you know, like I said, was doing quite well. So I continued actually doing that into college. I bought myself a new truck and was able to have some jet skis to play with myself. So I, you know, went into college with some money in the bank. But I continued to do it in college. So kept buying bigger ones, more expensive ones, a lot more of them, and then kind of was scaling. And then I saw an opportunity to start, you know, I was going to engineering school. So I was like, all right, how can I leverage what I'm learning in engineering and product development to make jet skis better? So that's when I started developing products for jet skis. So I found this component that would always fail. So I would engineer a better one. I found a contract manufacturer, worked with them. They would make I would design the product, they would make the product, and then I would pack and ship it. So that was kind of the early days of like Craigslist and eBay and forums, where I was able to kind of make a business, make a living, if you will, and go through college with some money. And then that's when, you know, you could say the first big idea came up with, okay, let's build my own jet ski. And that kind of started the kind of a small business on the side to making a genuine company that someone would put money into.
Oh, this next one is Subsea Systems. Jim Mayfield and his family, the Mayfield family, they have Subsea Systems. They build things like underwater cars, right? Which sounds impossible, but these people do it. Super innovative family. I will call all of these guys the most innovative family business in the Sacramento region, and doing amazing things. So as you listen to their story, just super likable, brilliant people. Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are doing it out in a remote location outside Placerville, I think. Is that where we're at?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like I was late, so I apologize, but we are here with the Mayfield family. They are Subsea Systems, which is really one of the most innovative companies in our region. And, you know, this is a 10-year anniversary of the Mark Haney Show, and Scott and I were talking about, like, who have been the best guests ever, the best stories ever that have been on the show. We need to try to feature them again. And so we are back here with the Mayfield family. And Jim Mayfield, you are the patriarch of the family. And this is a family business going back. You
you have the third generation here alongside you.
Yeah.
And prior to that, it was it your dad that was one of the founders?
No, it's actually the second generation.
Oh, it's a second generation.
Say, we do have a third generation because the grandkids, I see one of them is driving the forklift.
Okay,
around,
I remember there was a third generation. So how old? Okay, so I want to find out about the business, but I also want to make sure that we dive into the family dynamics. I think we were just talking about our family, so we're all family people. And that's one of the things I think that struck me in meeting you and Hannah specifically. And then when I met the rest of the family, I was just blown away by the warmth of your entire family. And I know Mom is not here to be a part of that.
She's extra warmth.
She's extra warmth. Okay, so we're going to get the warmth of Dad and three kids and underwater cars, which sound like impossible. But tell me about the business. What do you do?
You know, I think just to sum it up as a mission statement, we're trying to create products to get people underwater, to make the oceans accessible. That really is our mission. And so whether it's SeaTrack, which is our helmet diving system, which we've taken out over 3.5 million people with that product.
Oh my God.
Or our semi subs, which I don't even know how many millions, because we have 24 of those of various sizes that we've produced. We just keep developing more products to make the oceans accessible. We want to share our passion for the oceans. And there's no better way to appreciate the oceans and want to feel like you can you want to protect it and preserve it than to actually enjoy it and see it. And most people never have the ability to go beneath the surface. We always tell people that that do SeaTrack, one of the aquariums we're operating in is in Scottsdale, Arizona. And it's only 7 feet deep. But most of our guests have never seen the bottom of their bathtubs. So 7 feet is like the abyss. So we're just really trying to make the oceans accessible, from wheelchair systems to SeaTrack to our subs that we've built over the years, to even our more innovative products more recently, like Aquaticar, which is an underwater driving experience.
So again, some of Scott's favorite shows, some of my favorite shows of the year. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you all have a great, safe new year. And really, I hope you get off on the right foot and win January. I'm going to go to Cabo and kind of have some downtime with some friends and just get ready to hit 2026 running, hit the ground running in 2026. But great things lined up. We've got a host of great shows lined up. Growth Factory is launching new things like our new fund, our fund two, and this is not a solicitation for that. But just great things happening with the Backyard Advantage. So for all you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life, and of course all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship, here at the Growth Factory, here in the backyard, we're never above you. Never below you, always by your side.